I'm Mike Wilson, and joining us right now is Jay Leno, who I'm sure you know from his work on The Tonight Show, but you're going back into stand-up comedy from The Tonight Show. You started in stand-up, went to The Tonight Show, and now we're back again in stand-up comedy, and Jay Leno is here with us right now. And Jay, thank you so much for taking some time, and we're actually going to be able to see your stand-up coming up soon, and I want to give you a plug. It's going to be at Nice Wonger at the Nice Wonger Auditorium March 23rd. And I think a lot of people in the area, Northeast Indiana, Northwest Ohio, are excited about that. Tell us what you're bringing to the table, first of all. What kind of comedy could we expect to see?
Well, I think everybody's sick of Trump and Biden. I mean, you know, if you haven't made up your mind by this point, fine. Hearing a comedian or some other performer give you their political views, I don't mind it if unless I'm paying for it, you know. If I go see a musician, I don't want to hear him talk. I want to hear him sing. And I think it's the same thing with comedy. I just want to do a comedy show that's politics free. You know, it's so funny because you get the audience rolling, and then you get into Trump and Biden, boo, and suddenly it's like arguing with your crazy uncle. You know, it's Thanksgiving. The whole thing gets thrown out of whack. And so to me, to have a politics-free comedy show, I mean, there's a couple of references, but he's just not beating people over the head with it, which is something I just find annoying, because I say, oh, I'm enjoying this person, and then I don't care what their political views, because I honestly have friends on both sides of this argument, and some some I respect and some I don't, but that's okay. That's okay. So to me, it's like you can come in for 90 minutes. It's comedy without a political bent to it.
Well, that's good. I think there's a lot of people out there who have probably sat and thought about where they develop their political opinions. None of those have ever come from a stand-up comedian, so I think that's probably appreciated from the audience standpoint.
Well, maybe. To me, it should be you go to a comedy show to get away from the real world and just relax and have a few laughs, you know?
Yeah. So, and what's it like going from stand-up, and then you're doing The Tonight Show, and then you go back into stand-up about 2 years ago?
Well, it's funny that you said it. I never stopped doing stand-up. I mean, I was a stand-up comedian who was lucky enough to get a TV show. And one thing you realize is with stand-up, you can always work. You can always get up in a bar somewhere and tell jokes or, you know, Masonic Temple Hall, whatever the show is. With TV, you're always at the whim of other people. So even when I was doing The Tonight Show, I was still on the road 150 shows a year. I would go out every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday pretty much to perform and try out jokes. And the ones that worked, I'd take them back and do them on The Tonight Show. It was just a good barometer of where the country was, you know.
Yeah, so if we're going off of, and I think that's a very interesting perspective to have too, because if we're looking at your career path, you just kind of viewed yourself and described yourself as like, yeah, I was a stand-up comedian who just happened to have a nightly talk show. And I think that's interesting. Is that how you approach stand-up then too? Is like, yeah, I may have done this, but I was always the storyteller. I was always up there with the observational humor or telling you about something that I saw earlier, wanted to convey to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I always did, you know. I mean, people always kind of make fun of the fact that I lived on the money I made at the stand-up. I never touched TV money because I never knew when it was going to end. I didn't want to be dependent on that. So I always lived on what I made at the stand-up. I would bank one income and save the other and spend the other, rather, you know. And that's what I did. I just kind of laugh when you say, oh, and then 2 years later, you're back to doing comedy. You know, some comedy is one of those things. Once you quit, it's not impossible to come back, but it's pretty rough. I mean, you've got to keep it going all the time. I see a lot of performers. Well, I think to the average person, to the audience members, they saw somebody 2 years ago and he was funny. Oh, he's going to be even more funny 2 years later. But in that 2 years you haven't worked, so you're sort of starting all over again. It's a disappointment factor, you know?
Yeah.
I would see that happen at the comedy clubs, you know? A big star would come in who'd been doing a sitcom or whatever, hadn't done stand-up in years, and the audience would go, boy, that guy wasn't as funny as these guys we never heard of, you know? Well, it's because they hadn't been working. So to me, it's one of those muscles, you know, it's like working out. If you don't do it, it begins to atrophy and you lose it, you know? So that's why I've always but on the road all the time.
Yeah, so that's excellent. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, is I've always loved your approach because you approach the audience as peers almost, right? Like you're talking to the audience and it's like you're on their level and even on The Tonight Show, right? Like you're talking to celebrities that we all see, but you're talking to them again at that level that's then accessible for the audience and for the guest as well. So it really becomes like sort of there's a lot of equality or like a democratization of discussion.
I mean, I had to laugh when you said, kind of like peers. No, exactly like peers. You know, the trick to doing this is not knowing more than the audience knows. It's knowing exactly what the audience knows. It's knowing what your point of view or your point of reference. If people don't know what you're talking about, then they're not going to be able to relate to you. You know, I am a huge believer in low self-esteem. I think it's the key to success. If you don't think you're the smartest person in the room, you shut up and you listen. You know, I've seen so many of my friends sort of sabotage their careers because they tell a lighting guy what to do, and they tell, you know, most people can't do anything. Some people can do one thing. Mm-hmm. I think I could do one thing, you know, and a few people can do a lot of things, write, direct, produce. So when I got The Tonight Show, I just hired the best people I could, and I said, tell me when I suck. All right, please, just tell me when I suck. I got to know. So don't sugarcoat it, you know. And it worked pretty good. We were there for 22 years, and we were number one for almost the entire 22 years. And we had tremendous success with it because I just shut up and let the people know more than I know do what they're doing, and I just do what I do, and it worked out great.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do right now, too. So hopefully that's working. I wanted to talk to you actually something that we both know a little bit about, you probably more so than me. Let's talk a little bit about, we've got this rich heritage in Northeast Indiana, Cord Duesenberg. When you look at automotive, it was like Detroit, Fort Wayne, Chicago. There was a lot happening in the Midwest in between there and then all kinds of different startups. Are you making any visits to any pilgrimages for you in the near future?
Well, I always go to the Auburn Cord Museum. It's just such a beautiful place, and it's just wonderful heritage there because it really did rival Detroit. I mean, I was lucky enough. I got Duesenbergs, and they're quite a bit cheaper than they are now. Same thing with Cords and Auburn. It was, you know, E.L. Cord wanted to build his version of General Motors, starting with Auburn at bottom and then Cord and then Duesenberg at the top. And obviously with the Depression and everything, it didn't work out that way. But it's a wonderful legacy. There's still no greater car than I think the Duesenberg. I mean, it was the most powerful American engine from 1928 till the Hemi came out in the mid-50s.
Yeah, and so that is on the pilgrimage list, but I do want to make sure you are going to be in town, and make sure that we give you the plug that you deserve here. The Nice Wanger Auditorium, March 23rd. You're going to be there, bringing your stand up, and then maybe some local pilgrimages as well.
Sounds good to me.
Jay Leno, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Hey, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it. See you on the 23rd.
You got it. Take care.
Podcasts by Federated Media.